It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the French. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
The bus people. Beautiful night out in the bus people. Happy.
Yeah. It was a little warm out there for them. When they first arrived, it was like 120 degrees. But
they can get over it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, excellent. Sunny skies today. We didn't get any rain here, so I'm guessing...
No rain here.
We're under a high-pressure system, and we're doing good. It's cleared out, and wonderful. Wonderful time to be... Well, anytime's wonderful time to be sipping wine, but I'm just saying... Yes. So we are back after the little day off holiday that we had from doing this.
Yes. Our own personal holiday. Actually, yes. I had off-site tasting I had to take care of last week, and so I was at that. And so, and Mike wasn't able to continue the program either, so we just went blank last week. Yeah. We probably got 3,000 listeners.
Yes. That was our most popular show was last week.
Yes,
so.
Because we weren't there.
Amazing how that works.
Amazing.
I could have just come on and did some static noises or.
That's right. You know, and we were really junk up to that.
I could have played the sound effects. I could just,
there you go. Yeah, just keep hitting that over and over.
That's right. Oh, did I hit it twice? I hit it twice. It's still running. Okay, the crickets are on over. Today we're going to, or this evening, wherever you're at, we are going to have a special guest. Ron's going to get us started here with information on, I think we're off of Pennsylvania for a while.
We are. We're off of Pennsylvania. Yeah. We're in Rhode Island. We just went a little bit east and a little bit north from Pennsylvania. We're in Rhode Island.
Yeah, so we'll get started with that then.
Cool. Yeah, first, couple of quick things here. I want to tell you about a new blue sparkling wine that's out. It is pastel blue in color. It's a 2009 Blanc de Bleu Cuvée Massot. It's a California Chardonnay from Mendocino County that gets its color from blueberry fruit extract. And it's a sparkling wine. It's created by the premium vintage cellars to celebrate special occasions, but it's really cool to have yourself a blue bubbly. So it's called the Blanc de Bleu, B-L-E-U, Blanc de Bleu, by winery in California, Montesino. It's a Chardonnay. It's a Chardonnay grape that they sparkle, which is the classic French grape. So Blanc de Bleu, something to keep in mind. The appellation is Northern California Chardonnay with a hint of blueberry, alcohol 11% by volume. The style is Brut, which is slightly sweet, but that's out on the market now. I wanted to share that with you. Something else I want to share with you, too. I found a new wine app. I'm not sure if it's up and running. I tried to check it out, but I'm not sure if this is up and running yet. But check it out. It's called Wine Lab. WINELAB, the Wine Lab. It's supposed to help help you get through the confusion when you're in shopping. It's a step-by-step guide to tasting wine with explanations at each step, and it also helps you pick out bottles of wine and what you're looking for in certain varietals and all that. It's a free app. So far, it's a free app, so you might check that out. It's called, again, Wine Lab, W-I-N-E-L-A-B. I don't have much more information on it than that right now. You can Indiegogo is a website, www.indiegogo.com, Indiegogo, and Wine Lab is the app, the new app. So I wanted to share those two with you quickly today because I just found those, and if I don't tell you now, I will forget. We are in Rhode Island. We have a guest coming on in about a little less than 10 minutes here, but I do want to tell you some stuff about Rhode Island first. As always, whenever we get to a new state, whenever we start talking about a new state, I always like to fill you in on just a little bit of kind of blanked. I can't say it. My tongue's getting in my way. Just a little bit about the state and all that stuff. Rhode Island, as we always talk about when we start a new state, it has only five counties, smallest one we've ever done. We've got some of these where five counties are wouldn't even cover one little area. Providence, Kent, Washington, Newport, and Bristol counties. That consists of the entire state as far as counties go there. There's a couple major highways that run through it. I-95 coming southeast going up to the toward the north or southwest going up to the northeast, and it runs right through Providence. Also, I-95 runs into Providence, and then 295 bypasses Providence, so you won't have to drive through all that stuff there. It's a Providence, I mentioned two or three times, is the capital of Rhode Island. There's no wineries around Providence. Actually, there's one north of Providence, and there's five of them south of Providence, but none at Providence. The elevation, I couldn't think of that name either. Elevation, Rhode Island. I mean, it's low to the ground. Most of the state is very low. This usually lists the highest point. I don't have the highest point here. But it just basically everything is extremely low throughout the state. There are some hills and stuff. Florida still has the lowest hills, but Rhode Island is pretty well flat. Major rivers go through it is the Wood River, the Pawtucket River, I believe it's pronounced. That's in the southern part of the state. The Patuxent River and the, oh, geez, these are old Indian names. I can't pronounce these. Woonasquatucket River, the Branch River, Blackstone River, quite a few rivers, big reservoir in the middle of the state. The Chatuit River Reservoir, the biggest one in the state, but they have also a lot of islands and stuff. Here we go. Here's the elevation. The highest point in the state is 812 feet above sea level. That's at Jeremuth Hill, and the lowest point obviously is sea level. Not a high state at all. What was this map up here though? This was the physical map showing the hills and stuff. What was that? Somebody leave? So it's a pretty low state. Most of the wineries are down toward the bottom where it is very low. I don't know if you follow us on our Facebook page, but I was teasing about the name of Rhode Island. Actually, the state of Rhode Island is just not called Rhode Island. The proper name and the longest name for any state in the nation is Rhode Island. And the actual state is named State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. That is the name. State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. It was the first state of all of them to declare independence, May 4th, 1776, just a couple months before all the other states, 2 months before all the other colonies declared independence. So Rhode Island was the very first to declare independence. The official nickname, the Ocean State. The name Rhode Island is actually not an island, it's a mainland. It is located just east of Connecticut and south and west, actually, of Massachusetts, the smallest state in the nation, only 1,045 square miles or 2,706 square kilometers. So it's a rather small state, and a lot of that is bays and inlets and water. So very little land on that. The Eastern time zone is the official time zone. But the name, it's unclear on the name. There's two possibilities here. Rhode Island Colony was founded near present-day Newport, which is in the southeast, on what is now commonly called Aquidneck Island, Aquidneck, Aquidneck Island. And several islands around Narragansett Bay. Providence Plantation was the name of the colony founded by Roger Williams and is now known as the City of Providence, and that's where they get the part of their name. The two theories how the island got the name. The explorer Giovanni di Vorenzo in 1542 noted the presence of an island near the mouth of Narragansett Bay, which he likened to the Greek Isle of Rhodes. However, subsequent European settlers were unable to precisely identify that island that Vorenzo had named. Nevertheless, the pilgrims who later colonized the area assumed Vorenzo's Rhodes was Aquidneck. And the second theory concerns the fact that Adrian Block, during the expedition of the 1610s, passed by Aquidneck, described in a 1625 account of his travels, as an island of reddish appearance, or in the 17th century Dutch, that is in Reddish Island. Historians have theorized that the reddish appearance resulted from either red autumn foliage or red clay on the shore. So the Red Island or Rhode Islet came from the Dutch, and that's what was put on the maps for quite some time. And also in 1644, the words Aquidneck shall be henceforth called the Island of Rhodes, or R-O-D-E-S, or Rhode Island. So there's two theories behind it. Choose whatever you want. But it is now not just Rhode Island. It is officially called State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantation. And in a referendum election held in November 2nd, 2010, the people had a chance to vote on the name, the full name, with connotations that Providence Plantations might talk about slavery, but the people overwhelmingly voted 78% to 22% to keep the original full name. So it is now the official name of the state is that. So just wanted to fill you in a little bit about it. I think we almost have our guest here with us. Looks like Mike is trying to get her. We got her in our green room right now. He's talking to her and filling her in. So we will have her on in a couple minutes here. I had to take a sip of my Plantation red wine from my winery. I like red wine. Pleasant, nice flavors. Nice fruity red wine, enjoyable light red wine. We sell an awful lot of that. It's a great sangria wine, but we sell an awful lot of that. I don't know. Mike is still bringing her on. I don't see any disconnections or anything. No way. Well, there is an AVA for Rhode Island. It is the Southeastern New England AVA. It runs from Massachusetts into Connecticut, and it covers basically from Pawtucket, in the northeast central part of the state, down through the bays, and across the bottom part of the state, and then it goes into Massachusetts and Connecticut. That is the Nancy's on hold. We got her now. So, well, let's go get Nancy on the air, and get her up here. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for including me.
I'm glad you were able to make it tonight. I was just talking about Rhode Island. Your official name is the island of, or the state of Rhode Island and Providence.
Plantations. And Rhode Island is Aquidneck Island, which is Newport, Middletown, and Portsmouth. And then the Providence Plantations were beyond that.
Oh.
So we are the original Rhode Island.
Oh, okay. What I was reading didn't say that. So good. Thank you. Nancy got a hold of me just a little bit ago, and we were able to get her on the air, which I'm great. She is from Greenville Vineyards and Winery. And tell us about the winery, a little bit about the winery.
We are a 70-acre piece of land with 24 acres of grapes. We started as growers in 1982. We started as growers for Secondet Vineyards in Little Compton, which is directly across the river. So it would take, it's a mile across the river, but it's a 40-mile drive to, go traverse our island and then cross the bridge and then get her over to Little Compton. And then in the early 1990s, we had 14 acres under cultivation, and the fellow who was helping us grow grapes better, a fellow named Larry Perrine out of Long Island, said, "You have terrific fruit, and you should be making your own wine also." So we embarked on becoming a winery. So we've been growing grapes since the early 1980s, making wine since 1992, and then we restored the stable in 2000. And this is on a farm that's been in my family since 1863. So that stable held our horses years ago, and now is a place where people, it was the center of the farm then, and it's back to this being the center of the farm, which is really nice.
Fantastic. That I love talking to the wineries down in the east, because there's so many. Is this your picture, you and your husband, I'm seeing here?
The winemakers in the middle. No, actually, that's my mother and father. Yes, so my parents were they started to grow grapes, and we helped. This is in, 1982. And then in 1992, it became clearly a multi-generational business to forge ahead into the next. Dad was the fourth generation on that farm.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a nice photo, don't you think?
It is. That's a very nice photo. An excellent photo of him. The other picture I saw here, which is not clicking up as fast as I want it to, is... You said it was the winemaker, and
The winemaker is in the. We're standing at a barrel,
right?
And Richard is our winemaker. My husband's to the right, and I'm obviously to the left, or something. One of those directions. Anyway, I'm
the other way around.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
It just popped up. I saw it.
Good. Richard, we hired. He'd been down at the Williamsburg Winery He'd been there for about 7 years, and he joined us in 1997. And before that, he'd been at another Virginia winery, but he had trained out at Fresno State.
Fresno is getting a great reputation. I mean, they're starting to edge out UC Davis as an enology and viticultural school. It's a good background there.
Richard has done it. He just does a great job. He joined us, which were very small, relative to, he'd been at Williamsburg, which was producing 60,000 cases in this operation out in California. But we produced about 3,500 cases. But why he joined us is because it allowed him to work out in the vineyards and then take the plant from the beginning to the very end and putting it in the barrels and then into the or tanks and then into the bottle and seeing what happened after that.
Total control. Well, that's always nice to be able to do that.
Also curiosity. So I appreciate the control valve, but it's also curiosity, which is nice.
Yeah, that's true. And also it helps him see if there's a problem at the end, trace it back to what it might be at the beginning. This is something else. I find when I'm doing stuff, you can trace it all the way through, and if you're having a problem, you can always find what it is and change it at the source instead of having to worry about communicating with a couple dozen people before you get it. So,
right.
So what do you grow there?
We started when we started as growers with Cayuga, which is a great grape from the Finger Lakes, and Vidal Blanc. And that, those are the two first grapes that Sakana Vineyards was growing. So from there, my father had been curious with the, about the Burgundian varietals, so we put in some Chardonnay, which did very well. Then we put in some Pinot Noir, which we wrestled with because we were not grape growers. We were doing other things. My parents ran newspapers in New Jersey. I was commuting from Boston. You know, this is a new project. And this group from the Finger Lakes, Annenberg Nursery, out of the Finger Lakes, had sent us 8 rows of Cabernet Franc by mistake. And the Pinot Noir was too much for us, but the Cabernet Franc just was brilliant. So we took out the Pinot, replaced it with Cabernet Franc, and we now have about 4 acres of Cab Franc, which is a lot. And then about an acre of Merlot and about a quarter of an acre of Malbec, which is probably our most problematic grape, but some of it might be due to the site, because as you probably, your listeners, you know, and you know, if there's, in any area, there are various things that happen, and that might be just too moist, but we're not sure. So, and then meanwhile, Pinot Gris, and we just planted 3,500 new plants, 1,800 of which are Albarino, which will be fun, and then, of course, more Cab Franc. So that's what brings us up to 24 acres and 24,000 plants.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty good for Aquidneck Island. Our neighbors, our Newport Vineyards, they are on East Main Road, which is Route 138, and they produce maybe 40,000 cases of wine, and they have 60 acres under cultivation. And Sakonnet Vineyards, which has about the same amount in under cultivation and produce about the same amount of wine. So we're very small relative to them. We just produce wine from the grapes that we grow, and we all have our different strengths. And the Newport Sakonnet Vineyards, the big news here is that Sakonnet, which had been for off and on for sale by some very nice people who had been the second owners, the Sampsons,
just sold it
to Alex and Ani, which, you know, produces these very popular bracelets. So that'll be a fun thing to watch.
Yeah, they just sold it.
Mm-hmm. A week ago.
Paperwork's going through. It should be completed within about 3 or 4 days, they said.
Yeah. Well,
I just talked to them this afternoon. They were telling me that.
Yeah, the Sampsons, they're terrific people, and I'm sure these guys that are coming up are great, and they've got a great crew there, as you know, by having spoken with them.
Yeah, I asked if they were going to stay on and consult, and they said, well, we live in the town. We can't help but consult. It's just in our blood.
They want that. They want Sakonnet to thrive as it's been thriving, and so they're definitely going to be there.
Yeah, great. That's wonderful.
Nice.
Your soil. Tell us about the soil.
The soil is it's actually two types of soil, and you know, I used to know more about the soil than, you know, 20 years ago, but we have great drainage down. We're right on the Sakonnet River. And we have a east-facing slope, which is very nice. We get that morning sun. So we have great drainage. It is, you know, it's a nice, it's not sandy like Long Island is sandy, but there's definitely, you know, the way the water can travel down to the river to drain itself is terrific. The nutrients, we very seldom have to add anything to boost the vineyards. They've just, they seem to hold on. Every once in a while we put some lime in to boost up that pH, but in general the soil is fantastic. And then our climate, because of the water and because we're an island, we have our first major frost at the end of November. And then we'll go through bud break at the end of April. So we've usually picked our fruit. We'll pick our fruit anywhere between September 15th and November 15th. We might have 18 days of picking, which is all hand-picked because we're so small, which I love anyway because I think that the machines are too tough on those plants. So we hand-pick. We did try one once. It lasted for about 4 hours, and I said, no, that's enough. So they just thrive in this particular climate. There's a lot of humidity. Our biggest battle is with molds and mildews. So that whole vertical shoot positioning, the canopy management where you're lifting up those catch wires and exposing the vines to the sun and the breeze is we put a lot of effort into making that successful. We do some spraying, but we try to keep that at bay. I prefer to pay people than chemical companies. But we do have those mold and mildew issues. Downy and powdery mildew are our biggest. We've had a couple years of botrytis, but we've been doing this for 30 years, so a couple is not so bad.
Yeah,
some people love botrytis. With me if we don't get it.
You know, and a lot of people, we've talked to wineries around the country, and mold and mildew is not unusual, especially for the vinifera grapes, because the clusters are so tight anyway. So it's just something that I think everyone battles, regardless of where you are.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And I think, you know, actually going back to that Pinot Noir, those I see these Pinot Gris clusters, which are the tightest clusters that we have. Some of those Chardonnay clusters are fantastic, and you know, nice-sized berries, nice, you know, smaller-sized berries, but delicious and classic-looking. But, man, those Pinot Gris clusters are really tight. It's like the biggest cluster you'll see of a Pinot Gris is a handful.
Wow.
Doesn't hang like a Chardonnay. I'm looking at my hand now, and a Chardonnay cluster can go down your, you know, to your wrist, but a Pinot Gris cluster will not. It'll end at the end, base of the thumb.
Oh wow! So the small grouping of it. Yeah.
The idea of the mold and mildew finding itself in the middle of those Pinot Gris, and in particular that Pinot Noir from years ago, an obvious problem.
Yeah.
Pinot
Noirs are tight clusters, and so they do. Everybody complains about the.
Yeah, like the Pinot Gris.
First
cousins or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What wines do you make?
So we have the Cayuga is blended with a 10% of the Vidal to make our most popular wine. I describe it informally as a Riesling style. It's called, so we gave it a pretty name called Skipping Stone.
Ah.
And it's a great summer wine. I'm going sort of backwards on the terms of the tasting sheet. People will come to us, we'll have 7 wines to taste, and we take them from the driest to the sweetest. But our sweet is very, you know, is not.
What's your residual sugar on the Skipping Stone?
It's about 1.5%.
That's it? Wow.
Yeah. But because of the fruit, you have this really pleasant feeling of, fruit flavor and a really pleasant finish. It doesn't leave you with that sort of sugary feeling at the end. It's really delightful. Again, going so then slightly drier from that is the Vidal Blanc. And Vidal, I think they have Vidal by the bottle in Virginia, which it would be different, totally different from ours, but they have a lot of it in the Finger Lakes, like they do Cayuga, and surely up in Canada. I think maybe the Vidal might be a primary source for their ice wine, though I'm guessing. I have to put a little plug in here. I know a little bit about this because my mother puts out the New England Wine Gazette, the Finger Lakes Wine Gazette, and the Virginia Wine Gazettes.
Oh, did
you? So there are 3 of these newspapers, and you should find them. I think you can go online to, if you go to winegazettes.com or...
Winegazette.com?
It might be. But it's,
Now, you tease me and you say it might be. No.
Yeah, well, Google New England Wine Gazette and you'll come up with... They're part of our newspapers in New Jersey, so they may be under the whole other name. But if you Google it, you'll find them. But what's nice about them is that they really are totally committed to those wines, that region's wine. So the Finger Lakes does all this great stuff with the Vidal Blanc, and we have a delicious Vidal. Saconnet has a very nice Vidal. Newport, it's really fun how we all make them slightly differently. So people will travel from around those 3 vineyards, usually in a day, and have a nice trip and taste these different wines. From there, we have our Pinot Gris. These first 3 wines that I've described are all stainless steel. Then our 2 Chardonnays are both 100% barrel fermented, but we have 1 Chardonnay that is a little less oaky. We happen to work really hard at promoting grapefruit. So we'll prune our vinifera back to between 2 and 3 tons per acre to make sure that we're amplifying the fruit flavors.
That's a lot of that for Chardonnay. Chardonnays are very prolific, cutting it back that much.
The one thing that we have this great growing environment, but if we overproduce, the plant can handle it, but the impact on how that berry tastes is noticeable.
Mm.
So if you're producing 4 tons of fruit with this vinifera, in particular the Chardonnay, all that same amount of nutrients are going into 4 tons rather than 2 tons, you tend to notice it.
Right.
This first Chardonnay, the 2 Chardonnays, had more fruit flavor. We use some of the older barrels, so they're not overwhelmed by the oak. Now we know people really like oak also, and so we'll have a select Chardonnay and put in try to make sure that it's mostly the Chardonnay from what we planted in 1982 or 1983 rather than what we planted between 84 and 90, which is making less and less difference. But as the grapes grow older, there's still, between the romance of having grown Chardonnay in 1983 and the fact that it's in a slightly different part of the vineyard, we think that it's meaningful.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, the different things. I make an oak Chardonnay also. So, a lot of people are, I think, turning to the un-oak Chardonnay. People are getting tired of that heavy oak. So
Right. Just
a little bit of oak does make a difference, and it's not overpowering.
I find that our select on hot, humid days like this, the last thing I want to have is a glass of the select, because of the oakiness. It just makes you more thirsty. And then the less oaky has that nice sort of slightly refreshing component.
And
dry.
That less oak also in a Chardonnay gives you that little bite, whereas the oak tends to cover that up. And that little bit of acid bite coming out of that Chardonnay grape is just really adds a little special thing to it, I think. So.
Yeah. Well, that is, people are beginning to more and more recognize that the cooler climate grapes and the wines that come from cooler climate grapes, that acidity is quite, it's delightful.
Right.
I don't think in the, maybe 15 years ago people felt that. They kind of would pucker up and say, oh, gee. I think some of that, the fact that people are more educated than they've been because there's so many more choices. This is my opinion. But then New Zealand comes plowing in with their Sauvignon Blanc, which is just has giant acidity, and people love it. So
They do. Yeah, you're right.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. It really is. And
that's very helpful.
Oh, I love that. We have this un-oak Chardonnay. It's
yeah, right, exactly. So... But we all benefit from everybody else having these, these moments of introducing something new. And, New Zealand had been, had just obviously great resources back when they were starting all of their wineries to make a statement.
And they continued on. It's great for them. I'm happy. It's getting people used to the acid in wine too, which I'm happy about.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
So many wines have tried to cover up, our wineries have tried to cover up the acid, and that's what gives us so much character so many times. So
right, and also the character, and when it's an acidity that's been around for maybe a couple of years, it makes it into a great food wine. That's going to be great for another few years after that, because that acidity gives it its backbone to keep on tasting great.
And yet you try to explain that to people, and they go, oh, this is bitter. And I know it's
right.
Not bitter. You're tasting the acid.
I see a lot of people in the tasting room, and when I remember how I approach that, might happen in the next couple minutes. I'll let you know.
Okay.
But there is that discussion. That discussion does come up a fair amount.
Oh, always, always. So those are your whites. What about reds?
So we have those three red grapes, the Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Malbec. We added Merlot in 1999. The Cabernet Franc tasted great. It was a little lean and a little purple. So Richard, our winemaker, and my parents and I went down to Long Island to look at, they were exploring Bordeaux grapes.
Uh-huh.
So we went to the Long Island or Suffolk Extension Service, really great people down there, and they had we did a tasting with all these people, and had looked into the various clones, and we one of the things that we were trying to do was soften the Cabernet Franc and make it a little more red than purple. So we added the Merlot, and then the Malbec, both Richard and my mother really liked Malbec, so we planted some Malbec. So we have a Cabernet Franc that's always above 75%, so we always call it Cabernet Franc. And then we have the Meritage, and we joined the Meritage Association by sending our wines out there years, you know, back in, gosh, I guess we made our first Meritage in 2003. And that's a really nice wine. I do acknowledge that we have vintage variation with our reds. Our whites are pretty predictable from year to year, but the red will be, 2006 was a cooler, much damper season. So the wine has really nice aroma, really great finish, but the in between, the flavors are nice, but it's medium to light bodied.
Because of all the water, yeah.
So there's a feeling that it doesn't have, ooh, that's light, you know. And then I said, well, just wait till you finish it. and because those flavors keep on going. And then the 2007 was this spectacular growing season. So we're on the 07s now. And just fantastic. But classic Bordeaux-style wines that can, you know, keep up with every other $30 Bordeaux-style wine in the world. So.
Nancy, if you will, I don't think I've talked to the listeners about Meritage and what is involved with that. Not because I've tried to avoid it, just simply it's never came up. But I'm going to let you explain, if you don't mind, the background and the registering and all that about a Meritage, just to let people know.
Yes, the Meritage is, there's the Meritage Association, and it was started, I'm going to guess on this, but somewhere up to about 20 years ago, out of California, as a way to describe a Bordeaux grape without using the word officially, the word Bordeaux officially on the label. So there was some agreement, or maybe even a competition of, what do we call these wines? And then someone came up with the idea of blending the word merit and heritage. And so it became the Meritage Association. Then in order to be part of that association, you submit your wines for approval, and then you pay 50 cents a case or something like that to be part of this association. It allows you to use that word on your label. And as time has gone on, people recognize that as a Bordeaux blend. It used to be that you had to have at least three of the Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Malbec, or Petit Verdot. These days, I think it's gone back down to two, but since we put in three, I'm just staying with three. But that's the basic information about what the Meritage Association is, and they are a very active group. They're based out of Napa and Sonoma, so most of their activities, their monthly meetings are, here, come meet us at Simi Winery in Sonoma. And I said, sorry, can't get there.
Can't make it this week, yeah.
But they're very supportive.
Back down to two on it? I hadn't heard that. I knew.
Yes, that's a new piece of information that I'm not sure I've actually read but heard. So, but I think it sort of compromises it personally, so I've stayed with three.
I think so too. I hadn't heard that they cut it down to two. I knew it was three or four, but I hadn't heard that you can do just two. I mean, that's a blend that lots of people do with two. I mean, to be a classic Bordeaux blend, you have to have, I think you would have to have at least three in there, and ideally four, all four of them. But
I don't get to those meetings, so I don't know what the discussion was to have that happen.
It just seems odd that two, they're allowing it with two. That just, to me, that seems like they're compromising it a little bit. But hey, I'm not part of the group, so I just express my opinion on it. All right, thank you. The Meritage, I've never talked about that. I never had a reason to, so thank you for
calling. They have conferences, and they've enjoyed having our wine be part of their association because we'll include it in their tastings.
There's quite a few Meritages around the country, too. I mean, there's Quite a few wineries have came out with that blend. And there's some great ones out there, without a doubt. There's some that are really, and I've never had yours, so I can't comment one way or the other. I'm sure it is fantastic, but there are some out there that...
Well, we can ship to Rhode Island. I mean, Florida, yeah.
Yeah. You can ship to Florida?
Well, I think your state accepts wine, so that's a whole different issue.
It is.
Politics. Let's talk about wine.
We do, yeah. The Bordeaux blend, the Bordeaux wines are really classics, and there's some of the Ameritages I've tasted around the country that are, step for step, just everything that a Bordeaux blend would strive to be. It's just some beautiful ones coming out. So,
I think it's a good concept, and it's I think it's a good concept, and it is nice to have some people are really registering on it, and they've done a nice job with the marketing of it.
Yeah, and you can find them in the stores. If listeners pick a bottle up, it's well worth the price, and they're fantastic. If you like a Bordeaux blend, or if you're curious about a Bordeaux blend, you don't want to spend $300, pick up a United States Meritage.
Possible that someone will try to correct you and say, you mean Meritage. And so... It is this blend word between merit and heritage. So you can let them know it's Meritage or not.
There you go. It's probably mispronounced a lot because people try to sound cool, Meritage. That's very true. Cabernet Franc, I'm a big Cabernet Franc fan myself. I love the Cabernet Franc. It's a beautiful grape that I think is really underused, simply probably because it is so light and the color, and people like it to get a little bit darker, and so most of them are a little bit of blend. But
it seems to be becoming more, people are aware more of the grape over the last 20 years that we've been, having wine to sell. Its recognition over the last 10 years has been terrific.
Yeah, well, that's good. I still get a lot of people into the winery down here, and I start talking about different grapes and all that, and I say Cabernet Franc, and I get this blank look.
So tell me, can I switch the...
Yes, you may. Everyone
does.
Okay,
tell me what you do.
Florida can't grow Cabs, Merlot, Chardonnays, Rieslings, all those.
Okay.
Because of Pierce disease. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because of Pierce disease, we can't do it. It kills the grapevines. No matter what we try to do, it's going to be dead. There's a winery not too far from where I am. I'm Florida Estates Winery. We're located just north of Tampa, and Land O'Lakes is the name of the town. But there's a winery not too far from me up the road, Terry and Janice, and the Strong Tower Winery. He has some Norton in the ground that has been tested positive for Pierce disease for the last 4 years. He's had the grapes in the ground, and they thrive and survive and produce grapes and never had a problem. So everybody is very curious of why it's testing positive and not dying. So that's, it's a little... interesting side note there, but we use a University of Florida hybrid grape, French-American hybrid from the University of Florida that is resistant, or I can't say immune, but resistant to Pierce disease. But names you haven't heard of, different things like Stover and Blanc de Blanc and Lake Emerald and Suwannee and Tampa and Orlando and things like that, all by the University of Florida, UF. And they make for light wines. They're not heavy. They're not strong. They're all lighter style wines. I mean, everybody comes in and thinks the heat's going to make a difference. Well, it does in the fact that we don't get this concentration of sugar into the fruit, so it tends to make a much lighter style wine. But still, though, I have a white. I make a Chardonnay, which is 80% California Chardonnay, 20% Florida grapes. I blend with it, an oak style. I do a blush, which is just a California red grape blended with Florida whites, just a pink style. A red, a light red, which is a blend of three grapes. Orange, a key lime, which is Florida oranges fermented and Florida white grapes fermented and blended together. The key lime is key limes fermented and white grapes and then blended together. I do what I call a spice, which is our dessert wine, which residual sugar is like between 3.2 and 3.5.
Yeah.
And then a strawberry port, which is made with local strawberries, which is really delicious. Higher sugar levels, higher alcohol, but something that's I saw an awful lot of. It is really, right. I'm very proud of my port. It's a very nice port. But that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's what we do down here.
Yep. So are you growing?
Yes.
So what are you growing in this? You've got those reds.
Not mostly whites.
Okay.
Most everything is white. The Blanc, yeah. Blanc de Bois is one of them. The Stover is another one.
Okay.
Lake Emerald is another.
I did. I went to a winery down there in San Augustine.
Yes, they do muscadine grapes.
Well, there's also this what was it? Grapefruit cluster or fruit cluster grape, or it was just a delicious.
It
was all lowercase, but it was definitely the name of the grape, and it was really just a yummy wine.
Yeah, it's muscadine. There's a lot of muscadine grapes being grown down here in Florida. They're native grapes. Florida is, you can put the muscadine plant in the ground, you can leave 5 years later, come back and eat the berries, as long as the deer and the birds don't beat you to it. I've got a muscadine plant growing out in the front walk leading up to the winery itself, because it just flourishes. I don't do anything with it. I just let the thing climb up the tree and all around the sign and everything, because they grow like a weed. And they will grow in Florida very well. And they make a decent wine. I mean, it's a muscadine wine, and the muscadine is a love-hate thing. You either love it or you hate it. There's very few people who are indifferent about the muscadine.
Well, this was a... I'm embarrassed.
What they call a foxy finish.
Yeah,
and
but this. So you're saying this grape that had that name, the something cluster grape, was a muscadine?
Probably was, yes, because that's what St. Augustine, I think, does, is the muscadines.
Okay. I don't know enough to. It was such clean fruit. It was so dry. It was really delicious.
Yeah, and that's just something that they're doing I'm not aware of, but. They may be using another grape and making something else. They do, I think they do a Merlot that they get in from California or somewhere, I'm, if I remember correctly. But
it's fun to be, matter of fact, I mean, just to have this conversation. Are you a part of a Wine America?
Yes.
It's just so interesting when you go to these conferences and meet people who are growing grapes in the most extreme sort of conditions. It's just the development of clones that has occurred at all of these institutions that do the kind of research that we all need to have grapes grow in our different kinds of environments. When we were growing grapes and started growing, and Dad wanted to do the Chardonnay in 1983, he had a choice of four clones, and fast forward 20 years, and you have just an immense amount of choices that you can make might fit into your, parameters. So, excellent. You know, I think that's why we can grow grapes in so many different areas.
Well, Cornell has came out with so many plants that will survive the cold weather up there. University of Minnesota, also, whenever I talk to wineries in Minnesota and places like that, they all... talk about the clones from University of Minnesota. University of Missouri, University of Texas, all of these are coming up with clones that will grow in the areas there. It's just, University of Florida, it's so many, like you say, so many clones are coming out now that are being able to be grown and survive and make a decent wine. Not just the fact that they grow, but you can make a good wine out of them.
Right.
And one of the things that excuse me.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
One of the things that University of Florida has been trying to do is find a table grape that they can grow here in Florida when you get grapes around the country, you get California table grapes for like 4 months out of the year, and then you get South American, Guatemala, Chilean, or Chile,
right?
Or whatever. The other 4 months, well, there's like a 3 or 4 month period there where we don't have any grapes. And Florida has been trying to come up with grapes that will grow here that we can fill that gap. And University of Florida has came out. They came out with a grape called the Orlando, which I had an opportunity to taste it. And it was delicious. It was absolutely, it was as sweet as any table grape you've ever tasted. It was a fairly decent size. It was a good cluster. It looked pretty. It had a nice color to it. And I said, what's wrong with this? And they said, once you pick it, it survives for about 12 hours.
Right.
That's it.
Fascinating,
it
isn't
starts,
it?
Starts shriveling and going bad and all that. It just won't survive off the vine. And so I thought that was an interesting point. We're talking about all these clones and stuff that, you know,
right.
Things like that could happen very easily too. So it's just,
so
you're
you've
right.
You've got the variable about how to make it last on the shelf also. Wow.
Right. Everything but making it last so they can ship it and put it on the shelf. That's not happening. So I thought that was a very interesting thing there. It was a delicious grape, too, by the way. I had a chance to taste it. Popped it off the vine and tasted it. It was very good. But it wouldn't have traveled home so I can have it in the evening.
Yeah.
So you mentioned stainless steel and a little bit of oak. Basically stainless steel do you use?
Well, we rent space. We rent space from another winery and have for the last 18 or 20 years. And they Newport Vineyards, and they're just growing leaps and bounds. So they're limited. There's a little bit of an issue with regard to tank space. So we'd been for 15 years making two types of Chardonnay. One was a blend of stainless steel and oak, and the other was 100% oak. So then we had to become clever about how to continue to maximize the fruit flavors. So that's when we started to use the old oak on the first of the two Chardonnays. In this particular situation, it's a little bit about the logistics, and we have an intention of building a building at the top of our driveway, but other things that one deals with in this whole world of wineries and farms, and we survive on agritourism, is the fact that sometimes people forget that small residential communities have been often built on former farmland. And so we have a little bit of blowback from a couple of houses at the top of our driveway.
Ah.
We're surrounded by lots of farms, but we are definitely, because we're a winery and because, as you know, we're a destination, there is an agritourism component, and there's that realization that either you can have 100 houses there or you could have people there from 9 to 5 and then go away. So so there are lots of different issues with this whole world of wine.
Yes, there is.
Want to talk about wine, so I'll try not to get into too much. But the logistics of making wine requires, being able to be flexible, and that's why we only produce the grapes that we grow, because there are so many different variables that come around that if we were to buy grapes and then something silly happened, which has, I'm sure, has happened, we couldn't swing with it because of our business being so small.
Right.
It's about 15,000, 16,000 visitors a year, which is perfect.
Uh-huh.
So.
You mentioned something. Oh, government. You mentioned about the neighbors, government, the Rhode Island government. What is good, bad, indifferent? You want to hug them? You want to kill them? What?
One of the great things about Rhode Island is that because it's so small, when you need to solve a problem, usually it's the first or second or third phone call that helps make a difference. It's really great in that way. And the Rhode Island is, the farming has been one of its stars over the last, 5 years. It's increased by 42%.
Farming has?
Yes, because of the farmer markets, because of the attention that the, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, Chambers of Commerce and the visitors bureaus give to the
right.
fact that these farms and vineyards really want visitors. So it's allowed for our farming enterprises to be to really grow. And then there's this enthusiasm. Living in Rhode Island is a nice place to live. Land is very expensive, but if you can figure out how to do it, you know, and you like to farm, it's a really great place to be. So
but
the Division
Rhode Island
of Agriculture is fantastic. And people don't think of Rhode Island. I have had moments where people say, what, you farm in Rhode Island? But it was the Eden of our little island was referred to as the Eden of America in the 18th century. There is this great tradition of farming. So in the midst of having, you know, beautiful properties on the waterfront, which is some of the reason why grape growing in New England will never be a giant business, because land is so expensive now, Rhode Island has made farming a little more approachable to start up. You can put a 5-acre farm in. It doesn't have to be hundreds of acres, and then go to the farm market. So it's a good story. It's that's been a very nice thing for Rhode Island.
But I also
it's been great too. Sorry.
While I was doing some research on Rhode Island, I noticed that it is the second most crowded state per square
behind
mile
behind New Jersey. I know.
Yeah, I mean,
having grown up in New Jersey, yeah.
So I have to bring that up too. I mean, you're sitting there, you're talking about the farmlands and all that, but then being the second most crowded, you know, and
right.
density.
So it comes down to percentages, and
Jeez.
That is so it's not acre by acre, because obviously the land in New York State. Rhode Island is very small, but it is hugely successful in taking what it has and accessing it from a farm point of view.
Uh-huh.
And it's got great resources to help farmers figure out how to make their business grow. So there's an organization called the Rhode Island Center for Agricultural Promotion and Education, RICAPE. Big
wow.
name. But it's actually become a sort of New England enterprise called New England Farmways. And they help people, you know, sit down, figure out where the bathrooms are going to go, how to write a press release, develop a calendar listing and maybe a couple concerts just to get people energized about going there. Tractor rides, you know,
fantastic.
Those are, well, in our neck of the woods, this is not, you know, we don't benefit by the program crops, you know, and the farm bill. You have
right.
to, that specialty crop bill is what's important to us. The farm bill, where lots of money is given to, thankfully, this is not a statement at all, but Rhode Island will never benefit from, the program that the federal government institutionalizes.
Right. Well, it's too small. You don't have
soy,
enough to.
Corn,
yeah.
wheat, et cetera. So it's fun.
So,
it's really interesting. It's
so,
not about wine. This is about farming. Sorry.
How about? Well, no, that's all right, because that's farming is wines. It's vineyards. I mean, you know, almost every state we've talked to, they tell me that they're. When I ask them that question, they say we are now part of the farm. You know, I mean, I'm a Florida farm winery. I mean, it just, you know, and a lot of states are doing that now. They include you in, and once you're included in as a farm winery,
yeah.
then you can sell your wines at different events and different things like this.
Yeah, well, that's a state by state thing.
So, you know, it is, you know, we're, as farmers, we fall under better categories, except
right.
Ohio. And I talked to a guy in Ohio that was quite upset because they put them in the food aspect of the farm in Ohio, and he's
right.
battling it because they come out and inspect them twice a year. When they
From
make their grapes, they have to wear head hair nets, and they have to,
right.
you know, and all this stuff, you know. So they can get overboard, too. It's very easy to do. What about shipping?
That is really interesting about Ohio. Somewhere I read that Ohio had the oldest, even older than New York State, sort of grape-growing industry. Have you
Ohio was one of the first ones in the country. Yeah. So
yeah.
Ohio's got some very old vineyards and stuff there. But Ohio's got a lot of strange rules and regulations. If you're trying to ship to Ohio, you can't just ship your wines to Ohio. You have to get each of your labels approved. And
wow.
Each label approval costs so much money. So
yeah,
a lot of wineries only ship like 3 or 4 wines to the state.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of that. You know, it's you know, crazy. Speaking of shipping.
Yeah.
What's the rules and regulations in Rhode Island for shipping wines in and out and all that?
We are restricted. There are lots of things that went on during this last round, about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm not quite sure if things have changed. But we're, in order to not have wineries ship into Rhode Island, we are not allowed to ship within the state of Rhode Island.
Oh, so you can't ship across the street, but you can ship out of state.
So it's a little bit like that. It's a little bit like that.
Yeah, well, that's Arkansas, too. We talked to Arkansas, and they were the same way. They said they can't ship down the street, but they can ship across the border to Missouri and Oklahoma. So,
right. We don't. There is a certain amount of shipping that will happen because a visitor will come in, and they live in Florida. And
right.
They are going to fly back, and they would like to buy a case. So we will send a case of wine. We will ship a case of wine to Florida. When the state has very severe restrictions, we just can't do it.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, and that's all over the country. And, you know, I've brought this up a lot of times on the program. I tell people come into the winery, I wish I can have just 1 minute in front of every state legislature in this country. I would simply say, ladies and gentlemen, wines and winery is a multi-billion-dollar business in this country. You can either be part of it and get some profit in your state, or you can battle it and get nothing.
Right.
You need to be part of it. Thank you. And that's all needs to be said, because so many states are battling it, and if they embrace it,
well,
it could help
them.
Well,
I think that they're going – you know, this is all based on prohibition. And,
yeah.
And I think that if – the impact. There are so many small wineries. You know, there's no way, for instance, we have our wines available in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. You know, we're just not going to be able to have our wines available in lots of different places, and people would like to be able to get our wine. So, but meanwhile, we are not a threat to the huge operations that really supply the day-to-day consumption of wine. And we're not we will never survive if we even thought about doing something like that.
Right.
So, but really, it is completely a disservice to have it be so difficult for a small operation to be limited because of the concerns of a limited number of people.
Yep,
and I
exactly.
had. Gotten into a certain amount of trouble because I was fairly outspoken about it, and I don't think necessarily that's going to happen in this interview.
Be outspoken.
It's really challenging to try to be objective. Well, you can be objective, but the listener is often completely subjective when their business is possibly threatened. The only problem is that a business is not going to be threatened in the least by a small business trying to do another small business trying to do what they do best.
And you know, you're absolutely right. And like I say, be outspoken on here, because this is what we're all about on this sometimes. So you should hear some of the people rant, and me included most often. The way the laws are written around this country and the way they try to restrict it, it's, If they just open up the laws a little bit, Kentucky's a good example. Kentucky embraces their wineries. They've helped them. The people in the state voted for it. They, you walk into any Kentucky winery, and the first thing they say to you is, hi, we used to be a tobacco field, now we're a winery.
Right.
And it's just everyone there in the state has embraced the wineries. They have restaurants in all of them. The restaurants are packed almost every evening, especially on weekends. And it's worked very well for them.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is so many states don't understand the concept of the fact that if you embrace that stuff, it's going to help you.
Right. And can I have, our neighbors, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York, have all done a great job making this all happen.
Yeah. So, you know, New York is built quite a reputation for the Finger Lakes and stuff because of the wineries. And you know, it's just and on the other hand, Pennsylvania and their state stores, we spent about 2 months on Pennsylvania talking to wineries, and they all complain about their state stores and how, you know, it sort of suppresses the small wineries and stuff. So
it's to do business in that kind of operation is or situation has got to be incredibly difficult. And also, if you're a small operator, which most of us are in these regional wine areas, the time consumed with making sure that you understand what the protocol is. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I think people should understand what they're getting into. But the paperwork can just be daunting. And
yes.
Again, they have in our neighbors here in Connecticut and Massachusetts and again New York have made it very manageable. So good for them.
I noticed one thing too when I was doing my little research on Rhode Island before I started to contact all of you and before we head into the state that most all of you, as far as wineries go there, sell your wines in a lot of stores in Massachusetts as well as in Rhode Island, but I didn't see anybody selling in Connecticut.
Yeah, well, the license to be able to do that, at least the last time I checked, which maybe was 3 or 4 years ago, was $1,000.
Whoa.
So then a year.
Yes.
So I think there was a decision that people will come up from Connecticut. You know, they have a nice time when they get to the Newport area and visit the wineries. But I don't think, if I were to have our wines in Bridgeport, Connecticut, we might sell a case.
And it wouldn't justify the $1,000 a year.
Right. So you would take a lot of effort. You know, it's all about, it's one, that cash, and then the amount of time it takes to actually get the wine, you know, going down, doing tastings. You know, knowing that wine's going to sit on the shelf for a period of time and someone being unhappy about that and then going down and picking up the wine and replacing it with new vintages. And it's just there's a whole lot of time involved with it, which, you know, if it's all of that is worthwhile when it's makes sense either financially or from a public awareness point of view. But, you know, when you start off with $1,000, I think, and meanwhile, gosh, Connecticut has so many, you know, they've got 40 wineries, and that's,
yeah.
You know, some of that is those tobacco fields you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to watch that. Again, I read this in the New England Wine Gazette. It's just lots of new operations kicking in because the state is really helping out.
They are, yeah. We talked to Connecticut. They were very, very state-friendly with the wineries.
Yes. I mean, the wineries themselves, they're so enthusiastic.
You are in an AVA there?
We are the Southeastern, you know, whatever it says on my label.
Southeastern New England.
Southeastern
New England, Southeast,
New England.
Yeah, yeah.
Southeastern New England, so it's right along the shoreline.
Okay,
that
includes Connecticut.
So, along the shoreline through to Chouinard, which is in Clinton. And then it goes, I think, down further, I think you start getting onto Long Island.
Uh-huh.
So, and then if you go from Rhode Island westward, there's Diamond Hill, which does a wonderful job, and they have great Pinot Noir, and they have some really nice fruit wines. They are in Cumberland. And
oh.
I think that their appellation is like the Blackstone Valley or it's different. I have to say, I again knew that 15 years ago. I don't know now. what the appellation is. And Sharp Hill, gosh, well, that's in Connecticut, but I think that might be the same appellation. They make a delicious Cabernet Franc.
Oh.
Have you?
I need to go up there and taste some of your Cabernet Francs. I love Cabernet Francs.
Yeah.
I need to make a trip up.
I think the go-to, and I apologize to any vineyard in the area that I haven't, that I'm not going to cite right now, but I think the go-to for Cab Franc is Sharp Hill in Connecticut and our Greenvale in Portsmouth.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll make a note of that.
I can't remember the name of the town in Connecticut, but you can Google Sharp Hill, S-H-A-R-P-E, Hill, and that'll come up. He's a great winemaker.
Yeah. Okay. Make a note of that here.
Yep.
A wine trail. Are you on a wine trail there?
Ah, yeah. We are on the Coastal Wine Trail. Do you know that answer?
No, I don't. Don't know that answer.
Well, we are on the Coastal Wine Trail, which comprises five wineries in Massachusetts, and then three of us in Rhode Island. Actually six. And we started Truro on the Cape, and we will end up in Westerly in Rhode Island. So it's four wineries in Rhode Island, and five in Massachusetts.
Oh, very good.
We all have Chardonnay that we grow. That's what the original Coastal Wine Group was about years ago, 20, 25 years ago. And about 6 years ago, we approached, through the Specialty Crop Bill, the federal government and received funding to develop this Coastal Wine Trail, which has been very successful. And we have, there are things to win, and people come around, and they do it every year, and everybody's pleased about getting their new passport stamped. We took a lot of our ideas from Connecticut. Connecticut, I think, has two passport programs.
Yes, they do.
And
New Jersey has a big one, too.
I'm so pleased that New Jersey is kicking in. Now we have so many people that come up from New Jersey to visit in the Newport area of Rhode Island. And, having grown up in New Jersey, I like to find out if people have been to the wineries down there. And more and more people over the last 2 years have said yes, which is great because, it's the Garden State, and New Jersey has incredible growing conditions. I think that perhaps the biggest, thing that the New Jersey grape growers have to deal with is the fact that the soil is so rich.
So rich.
Yeah.
Where in New Jersey were you born?
I was at a town called Bernardsville, which is between Marstown and Somerville.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, not near, it was definitely farmland.
Yeah, away from the coast, not coastal, farm.
Yeah, right. Central, no. Definitely north central.
Right.
But I guess there's a great winery in the Flemington area. So fun. I'm so glad for New Jersey.
I can't remember who we talked to in New Jersey there. New Jersey has a program on their passport that after you get them all filled out, you send them in, and once a year they have a drawing from all the people who have sent in their filled out passports, and they draw a name, and that person wins a trip. They've sent people to Italy. They've sent people to France. They've sent people to Spain.
That's great.
It's a great program. It really is.
We do that, but it's we have, again, we're a little bit in the more of the tourism area, so our very nice cruise operator, and we send people to Bermuda.
Oh, very good.
So I don't know about the wine growing in Bermuda, but that's where people go and have a nice time.
Yes, they
do. And then there's a second and third prize and fourth prize.
Yeah, New Jersey has the same thing as that. Another question, I've been sitting here the entire time looking at the opening page picture scroll through, and I see you and your husband and your mom and your dad, and I see the vineyards with the river in the background,
right.
And I see the house and the vineyards leading up to it and all that, but I'm also seeing some long-haired bighorn cows. What are those?
Oh, my Scottish Highland steer.
Yeah, that's what they're...
Yeah, they're there to keep the brush clear. You know, part, okay. really important component for growing grapes is to make sure that the air flows between vineyards. So they, we have a particular pasture area that can get a little overgrown, and we're not supposed to cut it. So we have a couple of steer in there that help us keep those bushes at bay.
The Scottish Highland steers, you call them?
Yep, yep. They're Burberry and Macintosh, and it's just one of these funny things that I was in a wine shop. This is like 15 years ago, and a fellow by the name of Dennis Cousins breeds the Scottish Highland steer in Middletown. And I was talking to the fellow who I was hoping would buy our wine about the fact that we were considering whether to get sheep or goats. And so Dennis came in and said, no, no, you don't need any of those animals. You need my Scottish Highland steer. And I know where I can get two of you, two for you, because they only want two and they have four. So I'll bring them over, feed them bread. They'll be fine.
Uh-huh. So that's what those are. I'm going, why? What's with the cows?
people love those guys. Yeah.
They're friendly?
Really fun. Yeah, they used to get out. That was petrifying. But we finally they decided they liked the place. We'd have to, you know, entice them back into their area, which was a nice, you know, five-acre area. But the grass was greener on the other side.
Always, always, always. Mike, do you have any questions for Nancy here?
Yeah, I was. I don't know if you can hear me. I changed
Hello,
my microphone
Mike.
Out. Hi.
Good.
Again, we. I was just looking at your blog, and at the top of the blog, there's a mention of the Rhode Island Farm Scavenger Hunt, and I was looking through the brochure. There,
so
it looks really
fun. Yep.
Yeah, it does look like. What does that entail, and what do the visitors do? I mean, I'm reading it, but you know.
So between URI and the Extension Service and the Division of Agriculture, they put together this scavenger hunt, and I think if you go to, you know, Google Rhode Island scavenger hunt, it will all come up. But people go, this start, I don't know what you win, but they will, we've had probably three visitors a day, and it's usually a car filled with people of all ages, which we encourage, and they'll come down, and they have to identify what farm they're at by the picture that they see. So I was at someone else's farm, and they said, okay, is this where we are, or is this where we are? It was really sort of fun. Ours is very obvious because of the building. But that's an example of what Rhode Island is doing that is hugely successful. And the other nice piece of that is that it's including all sorts of farms, because people, of course, forget that wineries are, in fact, farms with lots of things to do for lots of ages. It was just a great thing, and it's been greatly successful, and I'm looking forward to when it happens again next year, and I'm really embarrassed to say that I don't know what happens when the...
What the prize is.
But when you, because I'm looking at the map, it's quite a distance, I guess, it looks like, from, was it westerly to the, what is it, south west, it looks like, all the way up to, I don't know how you say that, well, Slatersville area, and, well, actually it goes across to Little Compton. I mean, it's kind of expansive, but it's a good area.
Those are, again, Rhode Island is quite small. And is very varied. There are lots of different pieces to Rhode Island, whether they're mill towns that are in state off on the rivers, to the coastal wine areas, to coastal areas, fishing communities, and it's really just a great way to explore the state, to go look, find these different farms. And some of these farms are on the coast, but, you know, they are 2 miles inland, and so they are a completely different condition than the Slatersville or, you know, Greenville Vineyards or whatever other farm is on the water. It's really, it's just, and it's been very, again, people have really enjoyed the diversity of
you get to see the area. It's a great way to see the area, and you know, maybe things that people may have not have seen before. It looks very interesting, entertaining. So now the wineries or vineyards, they they put the sticker there? I mean, it looks like you fill this board up.
Yeah, you go in and say, "Is this this is you?" And then and we say yes, and then we'll put the sticker on there.
Okay.
Yeah, and they don't have to, you know, it's just like the Coastal Wine Trail. They can just get to our place, and then we sign off. They don't have to do a tasting, or they don't have to do a tour. They don't have to pet Barry and McIntosh if they don't want to, or visit with the dogs, or whatever else is going on in any particular farm.
Yeah, very interesting. And then you have, you have a Matthew Fest 2012 coming up on Tuesday, August the 7th.
We have
actually,
oh my God, does it say Tuesday, August the 7th on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anyway,
it's next Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
that's too bad.
Yeah.
That's really too bad.
That's
but
the
31st.
Yeah.
That'll be August the...
Oh, July 31st.
It's July 31st.
Oh, July 31st. Wow. Okay. Big difference here.
I was going to fly up to the 7th. Now I'm going to have to change plans.
That is terrible. We talked about this months ago. I'm really upset. Sorry.
My
mood will not go down at this moment.
Uh-oh. 4 p.m. So the timing, what about the time? 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.?
4 to 7. But we have in this just a fantastic collection of jazz musicians.
Mm-hmm.
We are on our 11th or 12th, I guess 12th jazz. We have these what we call jazz tastings, and people on Saturdays will come to Greenvale, and we have live music from 1 to 4, and then they taste either 6 or 7 of our wines, and we... you know, hang out, listen to music, and people bring picnics and just have a really nice time. And the musicians are fantastic. So Matthew was the fellow who started this with me that 12 years ago. And there was an unfortunate accident, you know, it was just a sad thing.
Yeah.
And so we have, in his honor, we have this Matthew Fest, and it raises money for a scholarship that he started at the Rogers, at the local one of the local high schools.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Fantastic.
No, but it's such a joke. It's really just a nice celebration, and we all have a very good time. And it's too bad that it says the 7th.
That can be
changed. Why would you see that under? I got the website here. What?
That's under their blog. If you go to the website, go down to
blog,
under site rental. And if you go to site rental on the website, we'll give the website address in a minute. But if you go to the site rental link on the left-hand side under Who We Are, there's a video of Greenvale Vineyard. You're in it. There's
Mom is in it. Yes.
Yeah.
She did a great job. Yeah.
So I kind of watched through that. It's really a neat presentation of you know, what you do there and everything from what is it, Chef to Go? Is that a program that you have there?
No, it's a Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Program that he did. I thought that was a nice piece.
Yeah, very good, very good. So you get to see
it. And they offered to put it on
bit.
Our website, so I said fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very
good. If you want to link this program onto your site, you're more than welcome to do that too.
This has been so long; I'm not sure people are going to listen to this.
Yeah, I know. They'll go, "Wow, this is fun," and then they'll listen.
Yeah, very good. That's all I have. Very good.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thanks for the helping. You know, with my logistics on the.
Yeah, yeah, I just saw August the 7th there too on that. So
Okay. Well, that'll be changed.
I won't say that heads will roll, but it will be.
Duck, guys, duck.
Right.
Anything else you'd like to add here, Nancy, before I have you give all of your contact information for the winery?
Well, this has been delightful. So that's what I'd like to add. Thank you very much, and thanks for thinking of us. And
thank you for calling
all
back.
All of us in Rhode Island are this chatty. So
good.
Next time you want to talk to Rhode Island, you've got, you know, someone else will talk just as long.
I look forward to it. It's been very interesting, a lot of fun. And thank you for taking the time to join us tonight. It's been fantastic. I told you can talk a little or as lot as you want, and you talked very well. I enjoyed it. So,
well, thank you, and thanks for letting me know what you do.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Hey, I, you know, that's that's why it's easier for me to talk to some people, because I know a little bit about what some of this stuff is going
Absolutely.
Through.
That was great. Yeah.
Before we go, I'd like you to give all the contact information, address, phone number, blog, Facebook, Twitter, everything, and numbers so people can get a hold of you if they would like.
Okay, great. I have to start with our blog, which is, you can access it from our website, which is greenvale.com, greenvale.com. And we have a woman who is really helpful in this area. But if you go back to the October or November blog about Cabernet Franc, there's just a stunning photograph. It's one of my favorites. Anyway, every couple weeks, or maybe once a month, or every week, depending on the time of year, we'll have something come up, and it's very interesting. So I'm quite pleased with that. Again, the website is greenvale.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777. Email is information@greenvale.com. We do have a Facebook page, so I think you just go to Greenvale. And it seems to be the only Greenvale so far. And our address is 582 Wapping Road in Portsmouth, and again, Rhode Island. And we are on the state and national registers of historic places. So if you're trying to figure out what winery that was, it's the Historic Farm Winery in Rhode Island. So this has been delightful, though. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And best of luck to you. If I'm ever in that area, you will definitely be one of my stops. So I'll look forward to someday maybe seeing you up there.
That would be great. Call to let me know that you'll be there.
Will do.
Great.
Excellent.
All right,
thank you
very
much.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Wow, very cool.
Right. Yeah, that turned out to be a very, very good time. I enjoyed that. She, when we talked, she says, how long? And I said, you can talk for, a few minutes or as long as you want. And so it was fun. She had a lot to say.
I hope I didn't get somebody in trouble over there. they'll be calling next week. Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah. They'll be showing up on the 7th. They're going, why isn't anyone here?
Ooh. Ouch. Okay. Well,
Headsville robe. Well, no, she said, I'm not going to say Headsville robe.
Right. whoops.
So,
okay.
We have a festival this weekend.
Yes. Yes, you do. I'm trying to find it. There it is. I don't know which one this is. It's been a while since I played it. Let me. Yes, you do. It's this Saturday, which is August the 28th. You have a wine fest, and that's 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we'll be back in a minute. Play this real quick. And I don't know if this is the dance version or what. But if you're with someone, grab them and prepare
grab
to
them.
Do the
everyone
the condo
dance.
Or something. Yes, there you go. Yep, it is.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Wine Fest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at Wine Fest.
Okay. All right, hold on a second. I got to hear this. What's this one, then?
Coming
what is
up
this
Saturday at Florida Estates Winery. It's
okay. That's what I thought. Because the one I just played, it sounds like it's recorded in a bathroom somewhere. I'm like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
So the echo or something in there, but oh, well.
Oh, well.
That's right. Recorded in the bathroom right here. So the things we do for production of the show.
I know. It's just,
amazing. Okay, and so you have Wine Fest this Saturday. Everybody come on out and enjoy it. And we ran a little an hour and a half tonight. Which is pretty cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it is. Full hour and a half. So if you listen to this on archives, thanks for tuning in that long.
Absolutely. And we're about to go over anyway in about 19 seconds, so they'll be listening to it in archives for the rest of it. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next Thursday, which is...
And we'll be in Rhode Island again.
Yeah, we will be in August as well, August the 2nd. So join us at 7 p.m. at that time, and, I guess we'll do the Rhode Island thing next week and see what we can do. And you say we may have two guests or something?
May have two guests. I need to talk to them and see if what we got scheduled here. We may have two guests next week.
Okay. So be sure to stay tuned with us on Facebook. There's a Facebook page for All About Wine, and be sure to stay tuned to that and keep you advised of everything that's going on here. So let me see that. What is it? ETR? I think so. Yeah, go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Okay? And keep you up to date on everything. And Ron does quite a bit of posting on there as he gets guests and everything scheduled. So that's where you want to go for the information ahead of time. And then we put it on the schedule here. But Facebook is the best source of information on the show. So definitely tune in there. Let's see. What else? Are we still on recording? I think,
We're recording. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, or are we ready to?
Okay. Ready to close it out and see everyone next week.
All right.
One more thing. Olympics starts tomorrow night. So all of you sports fans, all you ones that wait every 4 years to watch some of these events, which you never see any other time, you'll get to do it this next week. But be sure to mark your calendar and take the time out to listen to us next Thursday instead of watching the Olympics.
Yep, and there's going to be a lot of crowds doing this, and and then when something doesn't happen right, it's going to be this.
Then there are always we have always got to allow for the Russian judges and people going. We're hear a lot of that this next week.
So good luck to y'all in London with that and dealing with the traffic and everything, which you already have been. So enjoy it. It's going to be great. And we'll see you next Thursday right here on Blog Talk Radio. And stay tuned for what we have on the show next week. All right. We'll see you at 7 p.m. Eastern Time U.S. on Blog Talk Radio on All About Wine. Thanks for tuning
in. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you. It's 7 p.m. Thursday. Wrong button.
Everyone down.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.